right, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the regular meeting of the City Planning Commission. Today is Monday, December 5th. My name is Alyssa Olson. I'm the president of the Planning Commission. The city will be recording and posting this meeting to the city's website and YouTube channel as a means of increasing public access and transparency. This meeting is public and subject to the Minnesota Open Meeting Law. At this time, I'll ask the clerk to please call the roll.
Commissioner Campbell will be absent this evening. Commissioner Alper.
Present.
Commissioner Baxley.
Here.
Commissioner Sorrillo.
Present.
Commissioner Fayola.
Here.
Commissioner Ford.
Here.
Commissioner Marwa. Commissioner McGuire.
Here.
Chair Olson.
Here.
Commissioner Rainville.
Present.
That's 8 members present.
All right, we have a quorum. So next we'll proceed to the agenda, a copy of which was posted for public access to the city's legislative information management system, which is available at lims.minneapolismn.gov. And there's also copies by the clerk on the counter over there. We'll begin with acceptance of the minutes from November 14th. Commissioners, could I have a motion to accept those minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Any abstentions? All right. That motion passes and the minutes are adopted. Our next order of business is to organize the public hearing agenda. I will read through the agenda numbers and addresses and state whether they're slated for consent, withdrawal, or discussion. Consent items will be passed by the board. We'll be adopting staff recommendation as well as any stated conditions. So if you agree with staff recommendation, you don't need to do anything, and the application will be adopted by the board. If you would like to speak on an item, you can just raise your hand, and we'll put that item on the discussion agenda. So with that, here are items for the evening. Item number 4 is 315 27th Avenue Northeast. Staff is recommending this item for consent. Is there anyone here who would like to speak against staff recommendation on item number 4? All right, seeing none, I'll put item number 4 on consent. Item number 5 is a comprehensive plan amendment for 625, 629, 641, 643, 649, 653, 655, 659, 705, 711, 715, 719, 723, 727, 733, 737, 741, 747, and 751 Van Buren Street Northeast and 901 Summer Street Northeast. We will be discussing item number 5. Item number 6 is 636 Broadway Street Northeast. Staff is recommending this item for consent. Is there anyone here who would like to speak against staff recommendation on item number 6? All right, Commissioner Rainville. Okay, like during the consent agenda discussion. Okay, got it. But we'll keep it on the consent agenda. So item number 6 will be on consent. Item number 7 is 801 15th Avenue Southeast. Staff is recommending this item for consent. Is there anyone here who would like to speak against staff recommendation on item number 7? All right, seeing none, we'll put item number 7 on consent. Item number 8, right-of-way adjacent to 2301 45th Avenue North. Staff is recommending this item for consent. Is there anyone here who would like to speak against staff recommendation on item number 8? Seeing none, we'll put item number 8 on consent. Item number 9 is 2309 Plymouth Avenue North. Staff is recommending this item for consent. Is there anyone here who would like to speak against staff recommendation for item number 9? Okay, we'll put item number 9 on our discussion agenda. Item number 10 is 1254 Russell Avenue North. Staff is recommending this item for consent. Is there anyone here who would like to speak against staff recommendation on item number 10? Okay, we'll put item number 10 on the discussion agenda. Number 11 is 718, 819, 821, and 825 West Broadway. and 1828, 1830, 1832, 1836, and 1838 Bryan Avenue North. This item has been withdrawn, so we will be returning that item. Item number 12 is 1200 Marquette Avenue. Staff is recommending this item for consent. Is there anyone here who would like to speak against staff recommendation on item number 12? All right, seeing none, I'll put item 12 on consent. Item number 13 is 5009 Beard Avenue South. Staff is recommending this item for consent. Is there anyone here who would like to speak against staff recommendation on this item? All right, we'll put item number 13 on our discussion agenda. Item number 14 is 2100 East Lake Street. Staff is recommending this item for consent. Is there anyone here who would like to speak against staff recommendation for item number 14? All right, seeing none, I'll put item number 14 on consent. And then number 15 is 4300 through 4312 Upton Avenue South. We will be discussing item number 15. And item number 16 is approval of the 2023 City Planning Commission calendar. Staff is recommending this item for consent, and it's not part of the public hearing agenda. So to review, we have items 4, 6, 7, 8, 12, 14, and 16 on consent. We will discuss items 5, 9, 10, 13, and 15.
Excuse me, Chair Olson. I did hear from this gentleman that you wanted to...
14. Okay, we'll put item number 14 on discussion. So let's do that again. Items number 4, 6, 7, 8, 12... Okay, so you don't want to discuss item 14. Okay. So items number 4, 6, 7, 8, 12, 14, and 16 are on consent. We will discuss items 5, 9, 10, 13, and 15, and we will return item number 11. Commissioners, could I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All right, all in favor say, oh, we'll get to the consent agenda next, if that's what you're, yep. Yep.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yep. So all in favor of approving the agenda as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? All right, the motion passes and the agenda has been adopted. I will now open the public hearing on the consent agenda. So, Commissioner Rainville, if you want to go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there someone here from the dental clinic on Broadway, item 6? Could you just step forward, please? I'm going to vote for this. This is a great project, but I would just ask if there's some sensitivity to the dry cleaners next door with the success of your clinic. You have a lot more people coming there, and they park in their driveway. It might seem like, or their parking lot, it might seem like a small thing, yeah. But it's causing a lot of problems for their customers, so.
Yeah, and so this specific thing was about where to put our trash enclosure.
Right, and I know that.
Yeah.
I know that.
Okay.
But I'm using this opportunity to get a commitment
that
you will educate your customers to not park in your neighbor's parking lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And it shouldn't be an issue. I think part of the problem was that with construction right now, people thought that that was a place to park, but it hasn't been an issue for the last couple months now, and we've been working closely with them. So thank you for that. Yeah.
Well, I was in the dry cleaners 2 days ago, and it's still an issue.
Really? They haven't come to us, but I will definitely go talk to them tomorrow morning.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Thank you
very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right, is there anyone here who would like to speak to any of the items on the consent agenda before we approve it? Oh, Commissioner Alper?
Thank you. I just have a thing about the calendar, which just I'd like to put in a plug that we, at some point over the next year, think about perhaps moving the time just back a little bit to accommodate like a more of a, you know, people who are don't have as much flexibility and work a full-time job during the day. I don't know. I see Commissioner Marwa nodding. So I just think that's something to consider for the future.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Any other commissioners with comments before we carry on? Okay. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to comment on the consent agenda before we approve it? All right. Seeing none, I will close the public hearing agenda for the public hearing for the consent agenda. Commissioners, could I have a motion to adopt the consent items?
So moved.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Any abstentions? All right, that motion passes. So if you were here for items 4, 6, 7, 8, 12, 14, or 16, those items have been adopted. All right, moving on to our discussion agenda. Our first item is item number 5, comprehensive plan amendment for Van Buren Street and Summer Street Northeast, and staff is Jim Vole.
My name is Jim Vole. I'm the manager of the community planning section. Mr. Singh Sulajan, who wrote the staff report, is out ill today, so I'm substituting. And we've had the technology issues and so forth, so I beg that you be kind to me. It was hard to put something together on such short notice. But as you know, this is a comp plan amendment on the 600 and 700 blocks of Van Buren. You listed all the addresses, so I won't go through all of them, but I will mention that the 635 and 61323 projects, which you are all aware, you know, are familiar with over the past year, are not part of the comp plan amendment. So this is the location slide. Can everybody see that? The site is at the southwest corner of Broadway and Central, and I know everybody is relieved from what familiar with that, but those are obviously two major corridors in the city of Minneapolis. Central is also listed as a goods and services and is on the high frequency transit route. So the Route 10 goes on there now, and in the future it will likely be an F line. Well, it will, you know, it's slated to be an F line route with the station at West, with the station at Broadway and Central and at Spring Street. So when we did our mapping, our comp plan mapping of the comprehensive plan back when we adopted the plan, we looked at a lot of factors. And the main factors that you'll see listed in the comp plan are access to housing, employment, goods and services, and production and processing. And that's really what relates to transit a lot. But we also considered, and this isn't explicitly always listed in the comp plan, access to parks, schools, other amenities, feasibility. If there was commercial future land use under it or industrial, it typically got a higher built form. Existing uses, that's why you'll see in some places where you have a big institution, you'll have a different or more intense built form. And to some extent, the small area plans where they called for typically not a lower density, but a higher density. So you'll see that on Central north of Broadway, it steps down from Corridor 6 to Corridor 4. If you're familiar with the north side, you'll see that around where we did some of the station area planning for the Blue Line, even though that will be moving to a different route. And in some cases, we considered right-of-way width. That's one of the reasons Corridor 3 category was created, is because there are different rights of ways. But in general, we tried to put similar guidance on similar corridors. So the major corridors, Central, Lake, Nicollet, West Broadway, Hennepin, Franklin, received Corridor 6 for much of their length. But we also considered all those factors that I just listed. So you will get certain situations where you'll see different mapping. There's innumerable variations, but in general, it's the Corridor 6 on the parcels fronting the street, stepping down. This area, as we've noted in the staff report, has some unique features. So I guess I should have shown this map, but I think all of you are pretty familiar with the area where you have the parks, open space designation on the west side of Central, then Corridor 6, stepping down to Interior 3. And just a picture of the area. This aerial is not the best. There was one in your staff report that's more of an oblique aerial where you can see the viaduct and so forth. So, you know, if you were to build buildings fronting on Central on those parcels that are designated. So if you were to put a corridor six designation on those open space parcels fronting on Central, you would have a viaduct in front of it. So that's a unique circumstance. So when we originally mapped this, though, we did put corridor six on Van Buren, considering that there was transit in this area and other factors like proximity to commercial areas. But then, you know, we received the comp plan amendment, a couple development projects, and we reviewed it. And I think as we reviewed this comp plan, we concluded that these unique features could also reasonably support Interior 3. That is less supportable the further one moves south towards Spring Street, I would say, because, you know, those factors that we talk about that are unique are less common and certainly would not be applicable to the southerlymost project that's not part of this application. I can't remember. That's the 613 and the 635. Those developments, I think, you know, are already decided and are further to the south. And so, while there are examples based on those mapping features that can, you know, I mean, I should back up here a little bit. You can see that different situations apply that corridor six in different ways. You know, where you have the industrial north of Broadway, it's wider, but in general, it's the parcels fronting on Central. And that condition is common on a lot of the other major corridors where you'll see the corridor six on the parcels fronting the corridor and then stepping down to interior three on the ones along the alley. There are lots of examples where that doesn't happen as well. So our recommendation that this is a unique case and it's reasonable to consider interior three. And we do not believe this would be generally applicable to other parcels fronting on corridors throughout the city. So in other words, if somebody came to us on Chicago where it's, or on Central where it's corridor six fronting on there, we would say that that clearly is not a unique circumstance that should be considered. So at that, I will, and again, I apologize for not being a little more polished on this presentation, but if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer it. Otherwise, I'm done with my presentation.
Thank you. Commissioners, are there any questions for staff? Before we move on, Commissioner Rainville.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim, could you just summarize the uniqueness of this site compared to other corridors in the city?
Well, I mean, I think Councilmember Rainville, the unique factors that we identified were the fact that you have the should get it on an appropriate slider. I apologize. We have the viaduct there, which means that the parcels along Central, fronting on Central, aren't actually connected to the street. And that we have a situation where along the street, we have a open space designation and then the corridor six. That's not typically something we would see. So it's really the viaduct and then this other land use designation in between the corridor and the parcels that I would say are unique. There are other factors that were mentioned in the staff report. Such as some of the streets not connecting through and so forth, but I don't think they're as unique, if that's a way of saying it.
Thank you, Mr. Vole.
All right, are there any other questions for staff before we move to the applicant? All right, thank you. So there are a number of applicants, but we're gonna do 10 minutes on the timer for the applicant team, and then after that, any other residents who are here to testify on this item who are not on the application will have 2 minutes each to speak. And I ask that you please respect the timer. This is our stack of emails and letters we've gotten for this item, so we've already read a lot of this, and we'd ask that you try to avoid repeating things that we've, you know, already heard from other people. So I'll ask the applicant to please come forward.
So it's applicants. I'm Sarah Weber Jones, and I drew the short straw. And Enda said, I'll fill out this application. That's why my name is on it. And the homeowners and landlords who are standing up with me have all consented to this application. That's the long list of addresses that you have listed out. I wish that technology was working. Perhaps you could help yourself. This is a picture of the form for 2040. So first off, I want to thank CPED staff for assisting us in this application, because it is unusual for both parties. Okay? So I don't want that to get missed. The 2040 plan is not in danger here. It's just really getting the required closer look in one small area of 20 parcels. The last two times that Van Buren has been up in front of Planning Commission, six of you denied a larger scale project. Commissioner McGuire, you noticed that built form and that large parcel at 635 was gonna create problems. And then the second time in October when we were back, and three of you said that you always accept staff findings. And then in October when we were back, you said that you trust city findings and need to take their recommendations. So I encourage you to do that here, because they did do their due diligence just as much as we did. If the transit station is the argument and the reason for that original, you know, corridor six, then, you know, I give you this, which is my neighbor on Jackson Street, which has the exact same distance to the bus station as 655, which is corridor six. It's the exact same distance. And then, you know, these four duplexes, one owned by Johnny, one owned by a guy in Hawaii that constantly emails me and says, I'm sorry, I can't come, but I'm supporting your efforts. You know, they're closer to that bus station as well. But for some reason, the east side and not the west side of Van Buren got a designation of corridor six, which means up to six stories. And interior three, for many that haven't really dug into the 14 districts of 2040, not you all, kind of speaking to the masses, interior three just means three stories and four or more units. So it still provides incremental density. And that map that I'm passing out is literally a map. There are hundreds of interior three that are nestled and a buffer to corridor six. And so we're really not changing anything at all. If there is a right size to Van Buren, and that's really what we've been telling you all along, we do understand that there should be increased density, and we're welcoming neighbors. But this development, or the same development guidance, that three stories and more than four units is scattered across the city. And if those in opposition of this amendment believe that we're opting out or preventing something that every other portion of the city that has this designation with a similar built form must be anti-development. And we really doubt that that's the case, and nor is it the case with this application. A full build out of the 2040 plan, I believe, is intended. An interior three district for the west side of Van Buren will achieve the goals of 2040. And those were the same things that I laid out in my application. And I'd like to give my neighbors the opportunity to speak as well, because they are part of this application.
Hello, my name is Jeremy Wieland. I'm the applicant from 737 Van Buren Street. An advocate for 2040 had pointed out when looking at our plan, well, that's odd. And I asked why. And they said, well, you're like the only residential spot in the city on the backside of the transit corridor, zoned corridor six. And if you go through and you look at Hennepin, Lindale, Nicollet, Chicago, so on and so forth, most of those blocks are all appropriately zoned corridor six, but the parallel streets are not, and that includes the backsides of the blocks. So Van Buren Street, this two-block section, is truly unique in that aspect. And in terms of access to public transit, So I'm down in the corner underneath the wall slash viaduct, depending on, you know, how you look at it. And it's about a 3-block walk for me to get to the bus stop because I have to walk around the wall. It's approximately the same distance from the bus stop on 50th Street to the south shore of Lake Harriet. Lake Harriet is not corridor 6, but we have the same walk to the bus. And we're just asking for this to be an adjustment, this 2-block, to better reflect the rest of the city and the rest of the 2040 plan. Thank you.
Hi, all. I'm Chris Jones, 625 Van Buren Street. Try to go through this quick so we can squeeze everybody in. November 1st, Commissioner Marwa was commenting on 921 and 927 Marshall Street about why there wasn't commercial available in that building. I went back and looked at it, and Planner Sather had said that urban neighborhood does not support commercial uses. This was the same thing I noticed back in 2019, is that urban neighborhood in a corridor 6 building didn't make sense, because why wouldn't you put commercial along a goods and services corridor? And that started the email with Steve Fletcher conversation. So we've been in this conversation for a long time. And I don't think her question about that negates anything about the 2040 plan. She just noticed an inconsistency. We go out and we look in the public, and I know you've received a lot of emails from other folks. So if we look at Neighbors for More Neighbors, they have land use highlights of having an issue at Signature Cafe, 48th and Chicago, 18th Avenue. So they think the 24 plan got it wrong in the urban neighborhood land use designation, and they're asking neighbors to take action to change it. What we're doing is no different. This is so important that Streets Minnesota reposted those same articles with article names like Chickens, Canines, Caffeine, Cafes, and Commerce, or 18th Avenue and Central, and A Tale of Two Corners. One of the other authors from Streets Minnesota, Adam Miller, he stated that deciding that commercial uses are incompatible with residential neighborhoods was a massive historical mistake, right? Everybody has a viewpoint that something's not right. We're taking action on ours. And then the last thing I want to bring up, Alex Schieferdecker, I'm giving a whole lot of publicity to Streets and Neighbors for More Neighbors, but how Minneapolis could become a missing middle housing factory. We would love it, right? Like missing middle housing would be great. So his culmination was that we're not doing what we need to do to have missing middle housing. So through another round of regulatory reform, a more hands-on approach, as I've discussed above, and preferably both, the city should refuse to let a signature policy achievement sputter out for lack of support. So these are people who are writing you emails to tell them that there was something wrong with us asking, advocating for change in the 2040 plan. Our requests are no different than any of those outlined above. They are trying to invalidate the 2040 plan with their concern. Are they trying to invalidate the? Does the slogan more uses in more places not also invalidate all of the places designated as urban neighborhood land use? They're asking for a closer look at the plan, which is exactly what we are asking for. Allowing 6-story development on one side of the street will just make us collateral damage.
My name is Dimitri Carr, and I'm a longtime St. Anthony resident, where my family and I live at and own 641 Van Buren Street since April. And since April 22, I've consented to have my parcel changed from corridor 6 to interior 3. The very first goal of the 2040 plan is to eliminate disparities. Since the 2040 plan has been implemented, we've only seen the opposite of this goal. And it's been a nightmare for our family. So far, we've spent almost $25,000 in surveys and lawyer fees for an easement. So the development at 635 Van Buren wouldn't block our garage access. $25,000. But we won that battle, proving that his development design is very questionable. We also asked for a stormwater erosion study to be completed. If built, this development will be a 4-story commercial building that takes up almost the entire lot. It dumps all the rainwater on my property and the other neighbor's property, the Yangs. Both families of color, the only two families of color in this application. Our properties aren't designed to handle rainwater from commercial buildings, and this will cause damage. You can easily disprove me by getting a stormwater erosion study. Why should we have to pay for this developer's mistakes and lack of experience? Which goal the 2040 plan puts existing homeowners in lawsuits with rich developers? Approving our comprehensive plan amendment will not only help repair broken promises made to our neighborhood, but it'll also prove your commitment to some of the hardest to achieve goals of the 2040 plan.
Thank you.
I would like to ask if the rest of the people on the application could speak for 2 minutes. It's really important. We've been doing this since April, and it's hard to get to show up, to get babysitters, whatever. Can we just have two more minutes?
I mean, we've got probably 50 people in this room that still have to speak.
I'm just asking.
Okay. I think, no.
Why can't they just go in public comment?
So I spoke with the applicant before the meeting, and we decided that 10 minutes was...
10 minutes for me, and 2 minutes for everyone else.
Just like the developers get.
So it was 10 minutes for the applicant, and then we were going to do 2 minutes for people who are not on the application. So, commissioners, are there any questions for the applicant team before we move on to the regular public hearing? All right, I'm not seeing any. Thank you. So now I'm going to open up the public hearing to residents who are not on this application. So if you would like to come up to the podium, state your name and address for the record, and proceed with your comments.
I take it the overhead's not working tonight.
If you want to hand something up here, we can pass it around.
I brought some blow ups, some just photos in the screen. My name is Sylvia Radford. I'm at 648 Van Buren, sort of in the middle and on the other side of the street. I am here to speak for the comp plan amendment and would like to reiterate, we are not here to fight the 2040 plan. We're just looking for an equitable application of the rules. Splitting a street down the middle really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. If you look at the pictures, I flipped them so that the angle's the same no matter which way you're looking, up or down the street. This is not Central. We are not on Central. We do not front Central. This is Interior 3. The houses front Van Buren. A lot of the arguments we've heard for why it was originally made Corridor 6 was because it's close to the bus stops. As was pointed out, I have a little Google blow up. At the southern end of the street, there's a lot of things on Spring Street and a lot of my side of Van Buren that are closer to the bus stop than when you get up here and your access to the bus stop is basically a wall. The bus stop is up here. The sidewalk is down there. That's like a story and a half, at least. Not that I would argue against a zip line if you wanted to install one. But overall, it's an Interior 3. There is no difference between the even and odd sides of the street. Please zone them the same and make it Interior 3.
Thank you for your comments.
Hi, I'm Evan Johnson. I live at 634 Van Buren Street, directly across from 635, which is going to be redeveloped. I'm just here to support all my neighbors with their application to change the built form to Interior 3 from Corridor 6. Simply put, it doesn't make sense to redevelop all these properties in such a high density. I don't think our street can sustain that amount of people, and as it's been said, these properties don't front Central. They front an alley that fronts a park, which then on the 700 block front a gigantic wall, which Central is there. So the difference between my side of the street and their side of the street is going to be drastically different and doesn't make sense. So I think anybody that's here to oppose the amendment, I'm not really sure where they're coming from, because we've already got two properties now, which one of them being on the corner is, I think, one of the only properties that makes sense that could be redeveloped because it is a larger parcel and it is on Central. But all the other properties, including Cody's property across the street on 635 Van Buren, it's too big to be there. And there's, both these properties won't have any low income housing. So what's going to happen when all the rest of the street is going to be redeveloped? We'll have no low income housing. And basically what it's going to do is create more wealth for white men. So I don't think that we should be having the other side of the street as Corridor 6. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Patrick Sutton. I'm at 843 Summer Street, and I'm a renter. I don't own nothing because I can't afford nothing. But what I can say, though, from a renter's standpoint, this proposal is not to dismantle the 2040 plan. It actually is in support of the 2040 plan. It's for support of those individuals that can't afford a home. The Van Buren neighborhood is filled with multi-unit family housing, triplexes, duplexes, some single-family homes, and affordable housing. There's that keyword, affordable housing. More housing doesn't mean better. And you've got, I don't know, 200 flyers there that somebody rubber stamped from people in South Minneapolis and Uptown area that basically says, yes, it does. Well, I live there, and I can tell you that every year my rent gets raised because they want to keep it with the market. And so when we bring in just apartments or studios, all that does is raise my rent, and it makes me have to pay more money now so that I can't afford a duplex or a triplex or, God forbid, a single-family home, okay? For me to afford a single-family home right now, I can't even live in Minneapolis. Doesn't matter. North side, south side, uptown, north town, downtown, doesn't matter. I can't afford it. My only hope right now is a duplex, okay? And even those are $1,500, $1,600. But at least if I'm going to pay that money, I could actually conceivably raise a family there, both legally and financially, okay? As of right now, I can't, right? And so I have to hope and wait. But by doing all of the building with all the apartments and all the studios, yeah, it looks great on paper. But in reality, for somebody like me that can't afford a single family home, you're basically ensuring that I have to move out of the city to be able to raise my family. I love Minneapolis. I love its diversity. I love our neighborhood. I love our neighborhood diversity. And right now we're saying yes to everything when in reality, we're really just turning ourselves into San Francisco, and that nobody that lives here now is going to live here in 5 years. We're going to have to go into the suburbs, and that's the last thing any of us want. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments.
Good evening. I'm Anise Mazzone, and I live at 728 Van Buren. So considerations have not been made to the impact of the 600-700 block of Van Buren Street Northeast and the surrounding neighborhood. If the outside of the Van Buren Northeast is allowed to be developed as Corridor 6 district facing the even side of Van Buren and the rest of the neighborhood to be likely developed under Interior 3 district considerations. Two drastically different built forms will likely have environmental impacts that, like those stated in the recent court findings from Smart Growth versus City of Minneapolis states, identify the likely environmental impacts of such intensification as increased traffic impacts, and already we have a problem with coming on off of Spring Street onto Van Buren Street. It's a hazard right now. Increased noise impacts, decreased air quality, loss of the amount of tree coverage, green space, negative impacts to existing view sheds, negative impact on aesthetic livability, negative impact on bird and other wildlife habitat, adverse impact to water quality, potential adverse impact to stormwater runoff, increased contaminant load to a stormwater due to the increase in hard surfaces, soil erosion due to increased runoff, reduced groundwater recharge, increased water wastewater generation, increased potable water usage, and increased stress to existing public infrastructure, including the sanitary sewer system. That should be enough right there. So we're asking that you right-size housing for Van Buren Street Northeast.
Thank you for your comment. Oh, excuse me. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item?
My name is Soraya Scott. My husband and I own a few properties in Northeast Minneapolis, including a duplex at 655 Van Buren Street. Our residents are extremely grateful to be living in a community that offers green space, including a community garden that gives them the opportunity to participate in gardening in the back of our property and enjoy its tranquility. They're glad to walk to the dog park and have their pets visit other pets and run around. They're glad to have bike routes that offer safe, enjoyable riding, and they truly appreciate the peaceful, friendly neighborhood that they live in. 600 and 700 blocks of Van Buren have a mixture of single-family homes, duplexes, and triplexes with diverse population that blend well with the character of the area. Residents of the area have worked long and hard to make a community that's accommodating the needs of all its residents. The notion that one side of a quiet residential street is designated as built form interior 3 and the other corridor 6 seems incoherent. It's like trying to mix oil and water. It simply doesn't work. Since we already have single family homes and up to 3-story duplexes and triplexes on our blocks, we meet the requirement for the 2040 plan without the need of compromising the integrity of our street. We strongly support our amendment to approve, the outside of 600, 700 blocks of Van Buren Street is built form interior 3, and hope you vote to approve it.
Oh, is there anyone else who would like to go ahead?
Hello, my name is Aaron Sheiky. I'm a property owner at 600 Madison, as well as 676 Spring Street Northeast. I've come to know a lot of these neighbors due to the unique characteristics of this block, it being a park. I routinely meet with them to play with our dogs and just talk. It's a really unique block. It's underneath the aqueduct, this viaduct, rather, that we have talked about. I don't have any opposition to the 2040 plan. I would love to build a triplex at some point as a property owner. By approving the amendment to build form interior 3, we would still accommodate the 2040 goal of increasing housing supply by allowing larger structures up to 3 stories, while at the same time matching the character of the neighborhood and not creating a radically different built form from one side of the street to the other. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item?
Hello.
Are you an applicant?
No.
Okay. You're not on the your house isn't on the application?
No, I'm just a resident.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you for your time. My name is John McFadden. I live at 606, just exactly across the street, a duplex that I've owned since 1989. This is the 4th meeting I've attended concerning the development on this block. I feel as though the people who live here have not been heard at all through this whole process. We're the ones directly impacted, yet I feel no concern for our voices and no representation by the different commissions regarding the impact on our neighborhood. The built form on my side is interior 3, and just 60 feet away, it is interior 6. This makes no sense at all. Notice the developer last time showed scale drawings, but he never showed a scale drawing from the corner looking from Spring Street all the way down to the 700 block. One of the reasons is that it's be a caricature. It's just absolutely a cartoon of what this block looks like now. I took a little drive today on Central, which is backing up, and from here to Columbia Heights, there are only three houses. So we're the last little vestige of a interior of Northeast Minneapolis that should be left alone. Please hear what we've been saying all along and sort this thing out. Hear what we have consistently been saying. We want development. This is a prime spot for affordable housing. A triplex would be awesome, or a small three-story building that represents development that takes in more concerns than just making a developer a lot more money. It's disingenuous to even mention Central Avenue, as this is on Van Buren Street. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item? You can just come forward, say your name and address for the record.
Hi, my name is Cody Fisher. I'm the owner of 635 Van Buren. This building, that apartment building that's been mentioned. I'm here to speak against the proposed amendment, urge you to reject it in its entirety, and also speak against my own financial interests, because downzoning the street, restricting the housing that can be built on the street, would make housing more scarce, close to commerce, transit, and jobs that this location offers. And it would increase the value of the apartment building that I'm building. So I'm urging you to not change the build form and to encourage housing production in this area. So I guess, you know, I oppose this because it's bad for the city, it's bad for climate change, it's bad for housing equity. But I also just agree with Kimberly Holeen, who at my project presentation, the CPED planning manager, stated that this area was mapped Corridor 6 due to its access to high-frequency transit routes, and we do not believe that Corridor 6 designation was a mistake or a mapping error. We set citywide goals with the comp plan. Changing a comprehensive plan designation that was painstakingly generated through multi-year engagement process, because there's a group of property owners on a street that want to restrict what's built in on their block is a bad precedent to set, and it's not consistent with, I think, the vision that folks got behind with the comp plan. None of the conditions that were cited by staff are new, and I got 20 seconds, so I'll, in particular, I would say if you do believe the elevation change is unique enough to justify a comp plan amendment, it should be restricted only to those parcels north of Summer, the 700 block, not the 600 block, which has no elevation change. It has handicap accessible routes to high frequency transit, and it's much closer and unobstructed to Central. So thank you. And please cite transit as a finding in support of rejecting.
Thank you for your comments.
Good evening, President Olson and commissioners. My name is Alex Schieffrecker. I live at 1369 Spruce Place in Ward 7, and I wanted to speak on this item today because it raises a citywide issue. But first, I wanted to thank the earlier speaker for reading my blog. The purpose of comprehensive planning is to look at major issues of urban policy through a wide lens. If every block in the city were free to set its own zoning rules, we would see a race to the bottom with property owners acting in their own self-interest to maintain lower density neighborhoods. Recognizing this, comprehensive plans aim to set land use rules based on objective criteria and in support of city policies, such as concentrating dense housing in places with the best access to jobs and other amenities. We all know about the F-Line BRT, and the only thing that has changed in this block between the adoption of the comprehensive plan and the present day is that plans for the F-Line BRT have gotten more concrete. A Corridor 6 designation was and still is appropriate. I do agree that the other side of the block should not be a different zoning, but I'm afraid to say I think it should also be Corridor 6. I believe this rezoning request ought to be seen in context. You all know about the two apartment buildings that have been proposed and approved for this block. Neighbors have sought a spot zoning for all other properties on this block with the clear purpose of precluding further development of a similar kind. That likely means in the future, fewer people will be able to enjoy this ABRT investment. To approve this request would, in my opinion, undermine the principles of comprehensive planning, subvert long adopted city goals, and create the kind of patchwork zoning that the 2040 plan attempted to avoid. But I'm most concerned that it would set a precedent that would open the door to similar applications from aggrieved blocks across the city. So if the Planning Commission does approve this request, then I urge it to identify a bright line limiting principle that would distinguish this downzoning request from others that are likely to follow. And if the Planning Commission cannot identify such a principle, for example, for the blocks such south of Summer, I would suggest it ought to not approve the application. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item? If so, you can just come forward and state your name and address for the record. Okay. Last chance for public speakers on the Van Buren project.
Hi, commissioners, my name is Katie Jones. I live at 2219 Bryant Avenue South, and I'm here to speak on this topic in opposition to the downzoning of this property. I live and own in a triplex, and so I just want to speak to the previous comment about more housing increasing rental prices. In my experience in the last 3 years, when we've built a lot more housing, I haven't been able to raise my rental prices. I know I'm just one data point, but wanted to mention that. I'm also an engineer, and my day job is in energy, so I really focus on climate change, and so I'm coming at this from a data perspective. The city has strong greenhouse gas emissions goals, the state does as well, and each little piece makes a difference as to whether or not we're going to meet those goals. So I think our baseline assumption should be that we have housing for everyone. And with that assumption, I did some very basic calculations using publicly available data from MnDOT and other federal places. And what is key is that the position of this block. This block's proximity to transit is very important. Transit makes it more possible for more people to get around without polluting using a single occupancy vehicle. Also note that EVs, although improvements, are not climate saviors, but I won't go into those details. So I analyzed what is better for the climate. Solar on a single family house, which I know a couple of folks have talked about along this whole process, or a proposed apartment building on this block. Some very simple analysis of the solar array output compared to a person living on Van Buren versus a suburb or an exurb, looking at their transportation emissions and energy, shows that the subsequent carbon pollution from those new residents moving into an apartment building on Van Buren would have lower carbon impact. It's actually a minimum of 3 times as much energy savings, because it doesn't even take into account the energy savings based on the apartment building alone. You save more energy as a part of an apartment instead of a single family home. So overall, I would argue that our amendment needs to go in the other direction, and I urge you to turn this down.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else here who would like to speak on this item?
Hey there. My name is Risa Husted. I am the Land Use and Transportation Chair at the Sierra Club North Star Chapter here in Minnesota. I really appreciate everybody that's here tonight to come to speak on such an important land use topic. I want to just say unapologetically, Sierra Club strongly supports the Minneapolis 2040 plan for both its equity and its climate action goals. And today, we urge you to oppose this amendment. It does undermine, and make no mistake, absolutely does undermine the integrity of the entire comprehensive plan. Downzoning Van Buren will remove the opportunity for more people to live in a part of our city where people want to call it home. If you allow this amendment, you'll be setting a dangerous precedent to say no to future residences. And these are places with connections to Minneapolis small businesses, access to transit and bicycle facilities instead of these parts of the city that are dependent on cars and car transportation. And we all urge you to reject the so-called environmental arguments that evoke a false choice between green amenities and density. We have to have both. And the way forward today is to say no thank you this time to this amendment. How we develop our city has a profound effect in how we combat the causes and impacts of climate change. And this is going to set a precedent for the whole rest of the city. We don't want to be looking at these amendments for the next several years. The thousands of Sierra Club members in our city urge you to vote no on this plan amendment so that housing projects like 613 Van Buren are not prevented for generations to come. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item? All right, I'm not seeing any, so I'm going to close the public hearing. Commissioners, any discussion? Commissioner McGuire?
I just have some questions. I don't have any discussion items right now, but I'm hoping staff can answer a couple questions. My first question is, do comp plan amendments set any precedent? So if we saw a similar comp plan amendment, would this be used, you know, in that case as a reason to approve that, or do we look at all of them alone? Because I know we heard some other people, you know, saying this was a really unique situation. So if you could just talk about that a little.
So I want to say I'm not an attorney.
Yes.
But I would say, sure.
Okay.
Comp plan amendments set a precedence. If we had another situation like this where the parcels were a lot depth off the corridor or had some infrastructure issue and that in those combinations, it would be, we would look back and say, well, you know, we've done this before. Does it set a precedence that every time somebody wants to go from corridor 6 down to a lower one anywhere else in the city in any other spot? I'd say no.
That's helpful. Thank you. My second question is, I heard someone mention that, you know, a split re-guiding for some areas north of Summer. Is that possible for us to approve some of the parcels and not other of the parcels under this amendment, or is it all or nothing? I'm just wondering what our options are in approving or denying today.
I'm going to let Ms. Holine answer.
Thank
that.
You.
Yes, we did have that question come up even at a staff level when we were analyzing the application, so we did consult with the city attorney's office on that issue. So the staff recommendation that you're seeing in your staff reports has a set of findings that applies to all of the parcels. It is possible for the commission to parse out some of the parcels and recommend some for approval or some for denial.
Okay.
If that is the case, though, a separate set of findings would need to be made for any of the parcels that are separated out that aren't able to use the findings drafted in the staff report.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. My final question is, would the Van Buren project have been okay under the proposed comprehensive plan amendment if it was changed to Interior 3?
So I'm not sure which. We've had
the
635 projects. So Interior 3 allows a maximum height of 3 stories. Anything above that would require a comprehensive plan amendment. There is not a mechanism to do an administrative height increase.
Okay.
That said, those projects have all of their approvals. They are not subject to the application in front of you today for a comprehensive plan amendment, and the action taken today would not affect either one of those.
Gotcha. But that project would have been, if this was in place at the time, would have been too tall for that.
Correct.
Designation. Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Baxley?
Jim, just one of the main points you brought up was the viaduct height and the relationship to those properties. Could you talk again, I think, to the issue of the southern properties that don't have the viaduct impact? What is the sort of operation there in terms of specific condition that we need to address here?
Yes, Commissioner. You know, if I was getting into the height, I know the staff report mentioned the height. I don't think that's necessarily the factor, but I think it's the fact that there's a large piece of infrastructure there that makes it difficult to have buildings front onto Central. And then we also have, that's one unique circumstance. And we also have the parcels that used to front on Central, I'm sure, before the viaduct was built, are now having the open space designation. So that's the other unique feature. So I don't know if I've got a good answer as to when that tapering, as you get closer to Spring Street, becomes less of a factor. I know the 613 to 23 site, we definitely would say that that should stay corridor six. That touches Central, and even in the previous small area plans, the Central Avenue plan and the St. Anthony East plan showed that as being a mixed-use commercial site. So I think we could clearly say that even before Minneapolis 2040, we would have supported multifamily development there. So as you move further north, you know, you start to have that situation where you have the open space parcels in between Central and the Van Buren fronting parcels. And then as you move north of, I'm blanking, it was a Summer Street, that's when the viaduct starts. So, you know, not all of the unique circumstances apply to every parcel.
Thank you.
So since this was applied for by the residents and they in their application had to indicate which build form guidance they were applying for, did they work with staff on deciding which built form designation they were applying for, or was that something that was decided by the neighbors?
Well, I might have to ask them whether, you know, Mr. Singh-Sulajan had the initial meetings with them. I believe their intent was always interior three. Whether he had discussions with them to consider other built forms, I can't say for sure.
Okay, and so the commission does not have the ability to change that, like, for example, to corridor four or corridor three or something like that.
Commissioner, yes, that's my understanding, but I think Kimberly, is there anything you'd want to add to that? Or Ms. Holeen, sorry.
That's correct. So the question in front of the commission is a question of whether or not to approve a comprehensive plan amendment to go from corridor six to interior three. There's no option on the table for an in lieu thereof recommendation. It's really a affirmative or not on the question that is in front of you. And when consulting the city attorneys, they cited a bunch of case law that I won't bother you with, but that is a very firm answer.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Bexley?
One more question for Kim. So once we take a ruling on this, what is the process after? Is there more steps that this has to go through?
Yes. So this is a legislative decision. So this is something that automatically gets forward to the city council. So from here, it goes to the biz committee of the city council at their first meeting in January, which I believe is January 3rd. Thank you, Ken. And then goes to the full city council for consideration after that. So the planning commission is making a recommendation to the city council on this item.
Commissioner McGuire.
Thanks. Could staff, is there a way to pull back up the overlay district map that we had pulled up? I'm just curious how, so these properties on the west side are corridor six. There are some on the northeast corner of the intersection on the other side of Tyler by Cemetery Street that are also the same corridor six designation. And I know we talked about how typically it would be all along Central. So I'm wondering, are those different than this? Do we expect a re-guiding to come forward for those? Why, what's the difference between the west side here and the east side on the other side? So you can see kind of Tyler and Cemetery. And then we've got that kind of north-south row of homes there. How do we see those differently?
I guess I don't know if I want to get into too much of a recommendation without putting some thought into it and talking to the rest of the staff, but you...
In the original meeting with Rotama, Brian reached out to Bill Trammell and wanted to keep it corridor six.
Oh, okay. Evidently the neighborhood wants to keep it corridor six, but that's, I mean, that's all I can't bear to...
I'm just kind of curious.
I think you'd have
what
some
the
unique,
difference is.
You'd have some unique circumstances there. But I'd have to look at what factors we looked at when we did that. Was there an underlying plan issue that we decided to put corridor six there? But yeah, those parcels don't front directly onto Central as well.
Okay. Kimberly?
Yeah, I just, for clarification purposes and just procedurally, this application is a bit unique because it's a series of parcels without a development project coming in front of the commission. But I'll remind you, this is, I think, the ninth comp plan amendment that we've had so far under Minneapolis 2040. we're responding to and analyzing the application that's in front of us. Doing a citywide rezoning study to see how this would apply to other parcels is a completely separate process. So that's not something that we undertook as part of the analysis on this particular application. So all the findings in the staff report that you're seeing today are specific to the parcels that are in front of us for an application.
Yeah, thank you. That totally makes sense. I'm just was trying to look contextually at the neighborhood and see if it was a unique situation or if it was kind of mirrored on the other side of the road.
All right. I'm not seeing any more questions right now. Commissioner Baxley?
Can I make a motion?
You can make a motion.
I'd like to make a motion to accept staff findings.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there a second? All right, any discussion? Commissioner Marwa?
Yes, hi, thank you, Chair. I have a question for staff again. You know, I think your comment that this could set precedent, but also this is a very unique set of circumstances because of this viaduct and how this kind of plays into this neighborhood and how they're not actually funding on Central. Please just explain that to me. I'm not a lawyer either. So I want to understand how, you know, we've heard from so many neighbors, so many transportation advocates and all the things that we care about and all this 2040 plan. How can this not set a precedent then? Because I agree that I think this set of parcels is a very unique situation, right? There's this viaduct that's not actually fronted. There's a park there. It doesn't actually play in the exact form that we think. And so as part of 2040, you know, looking at some of these concerns and reassessing them is within. We've been hearing this for almost a full year now about how this small street in Minneapolis doesn't play off as if how maybe the zoning went forward. But how do we know that that doesn't happen in a different neighborhood, that they just use this example of like, hey, I can organize my 10 neighbors together and spot rezone my area, and this becomes like a giant NIMBY problem that every week we're having conversations about, and these new comp plan amendments come through. Because I think that's also the fear of this. And you all have to understand as neighbors that this is what we are seeing. Like this can, if a well-organized group of neighbors can basically rezone their neighborhoods, that's not great. Because that means that neighborhoods that are not super well organized don't get that same opportunity. So I guess just help me understand from the lawyer side, yes, this is a unique set of circumstances. Yes, the city found that. But why is that not going to become that every neighborhood that's well organized can then just keep spot rezoning?
Thank you, Commissioner. Well, so there's a lot there. But one thing I cannot promise is that we won't get dozens of applications from neighbors thinking that there's nothing, you know, anybody can apply for stuff. So, you know, that's a possibility that could happen. Again, as Kimberly said, you know, we're trying to look at this specifically, so if you haven't noticed, I really didn't want to get into doing a bunch of, you know, whatabouts. But I guess what I was trying to get at about precedent setting it, let's say they came in for an application at the southeast corner of Central and Broadway. We would have to say, I think, that we, in a similar situation on the west side of the street, considered some unique circumstances. It would be difficult, I think, over there to say, although I don't know, because we would do an analysis at that time, and I'm not presupposing or any recommendation, but I think that would be a situation where you would say, yes, there are some unique circumstances there as well, and when we considered that before, we made that change. However, if you just took any of the corridors, Hennepin, Lake, West Broadway, other parts of Central, Franklin, all of those that have Corridor 6 along them, and somebody said, well, our neighborhood's special, we want to change it, we don't like 2040, we do all of these other things that you may hear, we would say, well, that's an argument about Minneapolis 2040 as a whole. It's not a specific argument for your parcel right here, and we're not opening up Minneapolis 2040 as a whole. We're not debating that Minneapolis 2040 was the proper policy for the city. We're looking at this particular unique mapping situation and saying there are other areas in the city where you're one parcel over, where it's interior three, and there's some infrastructure here in these lots and a unique situation that we don't believe is generally, and I guess ultimately that's what you'll have to decide is whether you agree with that as well, but we don't believe it's generally applicable throughout the entire city. It is, it is different than other parts of the city. And we've done that with the other comp plan amendments as well, although typically those were to increase density.
Thank you. I have a question about engagement that is typically done with comp plan amendments. Could you speak briefly to that? What is required? What kinds of questions are asked? Who does it?
We have the engagement. I don't have the application with me. I apologize. In the scramble to get ready, I didn't bring that. I don't know if
I can answer. Just
you have that available, but we do require community engagement.
Yeah, so generally comprehensive plan amendment applications are unique given the amount of community engagement that went into the 2040 plan itself. We do have a requirement for a community engagement plan anytime someone comes forward to submit a comprehensive plan amendment application. The applicant's community engagement plan is in your packets, what they did. I think meetings with the neighborhood group are some, it depends on, basically they present a plan and we say, yeah, we think this is adequate for engagement, or no, it's not. So sometimes that looks like having a separate meeting with the neighborhood group that's not just on a neighborhood group agenda, having meetings on site. We require an actual large sign to be posted on properties that are subject to a comprehensive plan amendment. In this case, because it's 20-some properties up and down the block, there were smaller signs that were also posted on the properties here. So it is a requirement that's unique to a comprehensive plan application process. As far as what their plan actually was, I'd refer you to the staff report if you want to have the applicants come up and summarize it. Even though the public hearing is closed, that would be an option, but I'd refer you to the plan and the report.
Sure. I don't need that. Thank you. I looked at the staff report. Do they typically, does staff review the questions that are asked for discussion?
We review the engagement plan generally.
Okay, yes. So that does not include the questions that are asked?
Not every time. I mean, we don't go to the meetings, so if there are pop-up questions or things that come up as part of that meeting, we don't necessarily police the specific dialogue that occurs at a meeting.
Sure. So I'm just curious, would questions, I'm surprised, I have to admit, at the types of questions that are included in, that were included in the engagement. And so I am curious. Yeah, so I would just like to read a few of them. So, for example, do you believe the existing housing options on Van Buren Street are appropriate for the neighborhood? Would allowing development over three stories take away affordable housing and have a detrimental effect on residents experiencing a sense of belonging, stability, and safety? Do you think that new developments should contain green spaces within the development? Living near a busy street, we deal with vehicle emissions, etc. How important is airflow in association with air quality to you? I don't know about you, but I know that I would definitely respond in a certain way to those questions, and I'm concerned about the types of questions that were included in the engagement. I'm surprised, frankly, to hear that these types of questions were asked. I feel like they're leading questions, quite frankly. And I'd be interested in, that's why I asked staff if staff had seen the questions, if what's typical in a comp plan amendment with who does the engagement and the type of engagement that's done.
So the application form for a comprehensive plan amendment has a lot of very specific parameters for the engagement plan. So it talks about the goals of the engagement, who the stakeholders should be. So the applicant gives us a list of stakeholders. We look at that as part of the application and decide whether or not that's sufficient. Methods of communication. So how are they going to reach out? Who are they going to engage? As part of that, there is a list of parameters for engagement questions. So we ask for the list of questions they're going to ask and explain how they're going to be asked. And then it says, at a minimum, the questions should address the four policies that form the future land use and built form map. And then addressing the four policies of access to housing, access to employment, production and processing, and access to commercial goods and services. Then there's listing out how to document it and process the feedback and how to actually conduct the outreach. So it's like a four-page document that the applicants are given to give them some guidance on how to do community engagement.
We received a comment today with some maps. I received many comments, and I did a count of them, and I'd like to share that. So I received 31 who oppose this comp plan amendment, and I received 20 that support the comp plan amendment. So first of all, I'd like to say thank you to everyone who wrote me. I appreciate it with all the rationale. I did find it interesting that one person submitted some maps that were to be shared with everyone, and I believe that our clerk, Rachel, that you had written back and said that you would share those with us, and I just would like to ask because the packet is this long, could you direct us to it since we just received this evening? It was, I believe, Jenny Ackerman.
You're looking for that particular comment from Jenna Ackerman?
Yes.
Let me look for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I received that comment at the end of the day today. I did forward it to Rachel, and I believe she forwarded it on to you. Where it is in the packet, I don't know.
No. I don't know. There were some maps, and it talked about having different types of corridor zoning next to, I think it was Interior 3, but no, can't find it. I can look for a minute while you go to somebody else. Thanks.
Commissioner Baxley. Oh, that was from before. Commissioner McGuire.
Okay. I guess I have two questions, just again, process-wise. When we're looking at a comprehensive plan amendment, can you just talk through like staff analysis on what we would look at? I know for something like a conditional use permit, it's permitted with specific conditions. Is a comprehensive plan amendment more on that side of the spectrum? Do we look at it more like a rezoning, a variance where you have to meet specific findings? I'm trying to think like, is it more of an, yeah, thanks Kimberly.
So you would look at a comprehensive plan amendment similar to how you would look at a rezoning application. So again, it's a legislative action. There are specific findings that need to be addressed, and those are included in the staff report. The first finding being the extent to which the proposed change would be consistent with the comprehensive plan goals and associated policies. The second being evidence demonstrating the reasons that the plan should be changed, including but not limited to whether new information has become available since the comprehensive plan was adopted that supports reexamination of the plan, or that existing or proposed development offer new opportunities or constraints that were not previously considered. The third finding is the relationship of the proposed amendment to the supply and demand for particular land uses within the city and immediate vicinity of the site. Number four, a demonstration that the proposed amendment has merit beyond the interests of the applicant. And then number five asks us to look into all the specific elements of the plan that may be applicable, starting with land use and built form, going all the way down to technology and innovation with a number of topics in between.
Okay, thank you. So when I was looking at those findings, I feel like specifically the relationship to the amendment to the supply demand for particular land uses in the city and specifically near the site. So that was finding number three. I feel like we know that there's a housing shortage. I have, you know, a ton of facts on housing shortage, and we have a lot of housing policies in our comprehensive plan that I can pull if we need to. But I felt like that one specifically, like there is a demand for corridor six type housing. Obviously there's also a demand for the existing type of housing too. So that one, I feel like you could go kind of either way with that finding. But you know, I do think that there is a demand for the corridor six. The one that I wanted to, like, talk about with this commission is if the amendment has merits past the interests of the applicants, since we don't have any active development proposals. And, you know, I'm hearing from mostly, you know, property owners, a couple renters, landlords, that this really is just to protect their existing property. I'm wondering, you know, with the, do we feel like that finding actually fits? Of, does the amendment have merits past the interest of the applicants? And then the impact of the amendment specifically on our transportation, public health, and housing plan. Because I do feel like our housing policies in the comprehensive plan, specifically policy 1 and 4, kind of align more with the corridor 6 designation. I could maybe see like a split where the wall is, because that does, maybe it hinders visibility or access. But I feel like those other ones, it's so close to it. And we specifically say we should allow multifamily housing near public transit routes. We have a high frequency bus line going down here. So I just kind of wanted to gauge the commission's feelings on those specific findings, if that's possible. Because I think I would be open to like a split designation, because we do need findings for like why this is different than everything else.
Thank you, Commissioner McGuire. I agree with you. I would be, you know, I wish we could say corridor 4 or even corridor 3, I think, gives us more flexibility. But we don't have the ability to do that. I don't think that the southern block should be interior 3. So I guess I would, you know, I think everyone agrees this is really unique. So I don't think a comprehensive plan amendment would necessarily set a precedent for a bad precedent. So I guess I would say if there's support on the commission for a split decision, saying the north block would be approved and the south block would not, I would support that. But we do have a motion on the table to adopt staff recommendation with a second. So I don't know if we want to have more conversation about that, or if we're done with that conversation, we want to take a vote. Commissioner Baxley?
You guys bring up, it's a great point. I'm just looking back at the map. But it's hard to, like, where do you draw that line? Because most of those properties, with the exception of a little bit of elevation, I haven't been out there to measure it, one could argue has the similar effect. It's the last two which touch the end. And so I think, in my mind, it's really hard to, well, it's one corner of that one property is close, so we should. Now, that seems to be more slippery slope than accepting what our staff has kind of studied and recommend. So that's where I landed on that. But.
Okay. Commissioner Fayola?
I guess I'd just like to add that I heard the applicants in the respect that they're not against the 2040 plan, that they're in support of the 2040 plan. And this does support, the way I understand it, it does support multi-unit housing, just not as many units. So I guess I'd like to second the motion that's on the table.
It was already second, but a second, yeah, I see what you mean. Commissioner Rainville?
Thank you. I would just like to remind the commissioners that should this go to the council, should we accept the staff recommendation, will be vetted yet again, and then it will be vetted as well at the MEC council. So this is just one step in a larger process. And this would be a chance. The last council member agreed with the residents and said that he would change it from a corridor 6 to an interior 3, and that never happened. So I'm going to vote for the staff recommendation, because I do think elected officials should, their word to their voters is important. And this would rectify that past misdeed. Thank you.
All right. Is there any other discussion? I don't see. All right. Okay. I'm not seeing any other discussion, so... I'm sorry, go ahead. Call the question, that's what you said. Okay, all right, seeing no other discussion, I'll ask the clerk to please call the roll.
Commissioner Alper.
Nay.
Commissioner Baxley.
Aye.
Commissioner Sorio.
No.
Commissioner Faola.
Yes.
Commissioner Ford.
Yes.
Commissioner Marwa.
I abstain.
Commissioner McGuire.
No.
Commissioner Rainville.
Aye.
Chair Olson.
No.
So we have 4 yeas and 4 nays and 1 abstention.
All right. So the motion doesn't pass?
It fails.
It fails.
Okay. So would anyone like to make a different motion?
All right. You guys know I like a finding. Let me try. Okay. I would like to make a motion. Do we have to take approvals? If I wanted to approve half and deny half, procedurally, should we take those as 2 separate votes, Kimberly? How would you like me to do that?
No, we have 1 action on the agenda, so we should do that as 1 motion.
Okay.
Those that are being...
Please don't.
Those that are being approved with staff recommendation would be approved with the staff findings, and those that have an alternate recommendation make findings as part of the motion for that. Does that make sense?
Yes. So the areas of approval would not need additional findings. If we wanted to deny it on some properties, those would need additional findings.
Yes.
Okay.
So it could end up being a very long motion, but we're here
okay.
for it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take a... Actually, maybe I'll just have a discussion with the commission before we make an additional motion, because see if how people are feeling. I think maybe the north end of the site, the properties north of Summer, have a different issue than the properties south of Summer. I think the properties south of Summer are, you know, that one does, like you said, Commissioner Baxley, abut Central Avenue. And if the viaduct is the uniqueness here or the elevation change, I think that that's a logical break point. I'm happy to make findings to deny all of it. I have those ready. But I feel like there's more of an interest for a split. How do people feel about a split?
I can only speak for myself. I would support that motion.
A split? I would support that as well.
Okay.
I have a question.
Commissioner Ford?
I wonder, Kimberly, I want to understand the process here. If no action is taken today, which is where we stand right now, does anything go to the city council?
So I'll defer to the clerk on all of my procedure here, but if we are not able to make a motion that passes, it could sit in the Planning Commission. I believe the Planning Commission can forward it without recommendation because it's a legislative item, but we might need Ken to weigh in.
We might need Ken for that one, which I tried to triage that.
Otherwise, we would have to look at whether or not a continuance keeps us within the 6120 if we thought further discussion was warranted. The issue with a continuance is whether or not we think any new information would be brought at the next meeting, which with the public hearing closed seems rather unlikely. But I will put Ken on the spot. Can the Planning Commission forward without recommendation on a legislative action?
My question was, if we take no action, does it get to the council or not?
Yes. Well, that's my question for Ken, that would be the same as forwarding without recommendation.
Well, only if we vote to do that.
Right. It cannot sit at the Planning Commission forever. It is subject to the 6120 day law in state statute 15.99, which means we have to have it through the city council process within 60 or 120 days. And if we don't complete our decision period within that time, it's automatically approved.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm still not getting my question across, and I apologize for that. We have taken no action We could then move on to other agenda items. If that were the case, would anything appear on the City Council agenda regarding this item?
Madam President, Commissioner, I would need to do some research because that's never happened to my knowledge. And I don't know if the Code of Ordinances allows the commission to not make a recommendation or not. What I can tell you is right now, the way it stands is if the body took no action tonight, it would still be within the body's control and it would be on your agenda next cycle. As Ms. Holine has just said, though, there is a timeline involved, so there may be some provision that allows council to take it back from you, but I'm not sure if that exists or what that looks like, or if it just sits here until the timeline runs out and is automatically approved. I can't answer those questions right now.
Okay, so a follow-up question maybe you can answer. So if something is sent to the City Council by this body, whatever the action might be, can the council then change it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Do you want to go? Oh, Commissioner Baxley.
I have one more question for staff. I guess I would like to hear again, because this feels a little arbitrary, but it's defendable, but why the findings included the entire block?
Commissioner Baxley, they're helping out there. The findings include the entire block because that's the application that was in front of us. It would have been very unique for us to parse out a recommendation that included... is that what you're asking? Why staff didn't consider a partial recommendation?
Yeah, exactly.
We had that internal discussion more from a procedure, you know, whether or not it was within our discretion to do that. So we had that discussion internally. We thought, given the fact that the application in front of us was really asking the same question on all of the parcels, that we would do the analysis that way. And I think the reason we didn't parse it out from a staff level is because if you're looking at the map here, and Jim, jump in anytime, but because that open space designation exists all the way up and down. So, you know, we have two conditions here, one being the grade change, but we also have the condition where none of these parcels front on Central because of that parks and open space designation. That was the primary reason why staff did not parse out a different recommendation north or south of Summer.
That's helpful. I mean, is it... it's interesting, though, if, you know, applicants bring things to staff all the time. There's negotiation in and out. I just want to make it, it's not, you didn't punt it down the road and say, hey, we'll throw it to council. There's some real applicable conditions here that sort of unified both conditions on top, north right. and south of Summer. All right, thank yep. you.
All right, Commissioner Rainville?
I'd like to make a motion that we forward this to the City Council without recommendation.
Okay. Is there a second? Okay. Just because we're talking about it, I wouldn't support that. I think we should take advantage of our knowledge here and our experience and at least make a recommendation knowing that it could be easily changed. I don't see the benefit to us in not making a recommendation. Okay, so I see we've got Alper. Fayola, go ahead.
I guess I just, given the just this recent discussion on what staff analyzed, used the data, had everything in front of them to make a recommendation on the fly to separate out some of it based on, a hunch, I'm not comfortable with at all. So.
All right. Commissioner McGuire?
I would be happy to make a motion after, if this motion fails, to do a split guidance, and I have findings ready for that, so I will say I would not support no recommendation, because I think I would like us to make a recommendation, even if we don't all agree. I think we are the ones who can really dig into this, and I think we understand the comp plan the best, so I want us to at least find some motion to bring forward, even if we don't all agree on it.
Thank you. Commissioner Alper?
I just want to say I would be supportive of forwarding it on to the council with no recommendation at this point.
Commissioner Ford?
Thank you. I was just going to ask Commissioner Rainville, Councilmember Rainville, if he would consider withdrawing his motion for now to hear what the suggestion is going to be.
No, because I don't think we should micromanage the applicants of the application. I think we vote on it in its entirety one way or the other, or forward it to the city council.
Okay. I'm not seeing any up. I guess I would say I don't feel like we are parsing it out. I think we're making a decision or a recommendation very decisively based on which parcels they are and where they are and what conditions there are and what transit is available and what it's adjacent to. So I don't think it's, I would like to make a recommendation, but all right. Is there anything else, or should we call a vote? Commissioner Rainville?
I just have a question. I'd like to see a show of hands. How many of you have actually been and looked at this site? Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else, or we will call the roll on the motion to make no recommendation. All right. Seeing none, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Commissioner Alper.
Aye.
Commissioner Baxley.
Nay.
Commissioner Sorio.
Yes.
Commissioner Feola.
Yes.
Commissioner Ford.
Aye.
Commissioner Marwa.
No.
Commissioner McGuire.
No.
Commissioner Rainville.
Yes.
Chair Olson.
No.
So that's 5 yeas and 4 nays.
All right, that motion passes. there will be no recommendation forwarded to the city council. So that completes that item. Our next item this evening is... Okay. Our next item for discussion this evening is item number 9. And staff is Shanna Sether.
Commissioner Olson, while Shanna's getting ready, she had suggested perhaps taking 9 and 10 together because they're adjacent buildings with one plan set. If the commission is okay with that, we would proceed accordingly.
All right. Commissioners, is there any objection to taking items 9 and 10 together?
No objection.
All right.
Good evening. My name is Shanna Sether. I'm a planner within CPED, and I'm here to present on items number 9 and number 10 on your agenda this evening. Number 9 is the property located at 2309 Plymouth Avenue North, and item number 10 is for the property located at 1254 Russell Avenue North. The The applicant is proposing two separate land use applications, although many of the comments received and kind of the presentation of materials show them together. But I want to just make a note that these are separate actions and separate items today. The property located at 2309 Plymouth Avenue North is known as the East Building. The existing property is the Plymouth Congregational Church. That property was evaluated for historic significance and was determined not to be eligible for the for local designation by the city of Minneapolis. The applicant is proposing to demolish the existing church to construct a new five-story multiple family dwelling. There would be 38 dwelling units within the structure and 5 off-street parking spaces. That building is also known as the East Building. The West Building at 1254 Russell Avenue North is presently a vacant property, and the proposed construction would be a 4-story multiple family structure with no off-street parking, and there would be a total of 25 dwelling units. The applicant is seeking similar applications for both properties as well. Both properties are seeking a variance to reduce the required front yard setbacks. So the front yards for each of the properties are along the north-south street. So Queen Avenue North for the East Building has a minimum front yard setback of 35 feet. Although the property is zoned corridor 4, the adjacent property to the south is a single-family dwelling and is set back 35 feet. So that increases the required front yard setback along Queen Avenue North. A similar condition exists on the West Building at 1254 Russell Avenue North, where the property to the south is set back 28.1 feet from the front property line, and the applicant is proposing to locate the structure 4.5 feet to the front property line along Russell Avenue North. The corner side yard for both properties runs along the north property line along Plymouth Avenue. That street was recently upgraded with enhanced bicycle amenities, and that is a corner side yard setback. So for the 5-story structure on the east, it's a 10-foot setback, and for the 4-story project on the west side, it's an 8-foot setback. For the East Building, the applicant is requesting a variance down to 1 foot, and for the West Building, it's down to 4.5 feet. And then the new construction for both structures requires site plan review. Staff is recommending approval of the requested variances to reduce both the front yard and corner side yard for both projects based on the findings you'll see in your packet. But I'll just at a high level describe the condition for which staff recommended approval. So staff found a unique circumstance for properties along Plymouth Avenue. There's a combination of both multiple family and non-residential uses that are located closer to the corner, and that's generally the vernacular along Plymouth Avenue North. So we recognize that as a unique condition to the subject property that led to practical difficulty in complying with the setback along both the corner and the fronts. You'll notice that both structures notch out for that first 25 feet measured, so there's essentially kind of a box here where the building is set back to match the structures to the south at 35 feet and 28.1 feet for the first 25 feet. So this would be a condition that we would expect in commercial zoning. So if the properties were zoned commercial today, these setbacks would comply. The future land use designation for both of these properties is corridor mixed use. So commercial zoning would be appropriate and is likely to be the case after the land use rezoning study completes. Therefore, staff found that the proposed setbacks as shown are reasonable and consistent with the spirit and intent of the ordinance and the comprehensive plan. Lastly, again, we note we stated that the proposed setbacks would not be injurious to the use of enjoyment of other property in the vicinity and not be out of character, again, kind of noting the street wall along Plymouth Avenue North and that greater separation where adjacent to lower density residential to the south of both structures. The East Building at 2309 Plymouth Avenue North is seeking an administrative height increase to go from 4 stories to 5 stories. Findings for that height increase are located on pages 8 and 9 of your staff report today. Generally speaking, there are not solar energy systems impacted. The properties to the south are also designated as Corridor 4, so they have the same built form overlay district to the south. And then the applicant is proposing amenities to allow for that additional height increase by providing a minimum of 2 dwelling units at 30% AMI. So they'll be affordable at a rate at or below 30% of the area median income. Both projects are also seeking an FAR premium to allow for greater floor area. And the projects are both utilizing that same affordable housing allowance. So the east building is required to provide a minimum of 2 units at or below 30% AMI, and the west building is required to provide 1 dwelling unit at that rate or lower. And then the additional FAR is also, so 3 premiums are sought essentially for the east building, and that's because they have enclosed the off-street parking. The east building is not seeking any alternative compliance to the site plan review standards. The west building is seeking alternative compliance to the temporary drop-off space. Staff felt as though there was insufficient space and not sufficient need to warrant the drop-off spaces for the west building. And then there was also alternative compliance sought to reduce the number of shrubs. Staff is recommending that the applicant have sufficient space to allow for the minimum number of shrubs, so that's a condition of approval. The applicant is not contesting any of the conditions of approval, and therefore staff is recommending approval of the requested applications before you today for items number 9 and 10. There are listed recommendations on page 13 of item 9 and page 12 of item 10. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for staff? Commissioner McGuire.
Thanks. Shanna, does the building along the southern edge, does that meet setbacks?
The interior side yard setbacks met?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Commissioner Ford, did you have a... Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I don't see any more questions. Thank you. So if the applicant, I'll open the public hearing. If the applicant would like to come say something about the project.
Hi, I'm just introduce myself. I'm James Archer, the applicant developer and sponsor of this development. A little background on myself. I've been in real estate for close to 20 years. 13 of those years, I lived literally one block away from this site, this development, the church. For all those years, I see that it was vacant, deteriorated, and it was an eyesore in the community. With my background and my experience, 4 years ago, I had the chance to purchase the property from the owners. And the first thing that came to my mind is, what could I do with this site to better the community and better serve the people of the community? Given my knowledge of how fast rents are increasing and the place displacement that is going on with increasing rents, along with numerous conversations I've had with people in the community, it was clear that there was a need for new high quality housing that's affordable and accessible to all range of people in the community. So that's what drove me to pursue an affordable development. With this particular development, 24 of the units are at 30% AMI and the rest are at 50% AMI. I think that's 39, if my math is correct. So living there, knowing it, just seeing the need for it is what has got me to this point. It's been a long process going on close to 4 years now. So that's all I have.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the applicant? All right, I don't see any. Thank you.
Thanks.
We'll proceed with the public hearing. So if there's anyone here from the neighborhood or from anywhere who would like to speak on this item, you can come forward, state your name and address for the record.
Good evening. My name is Beverly Probst. I reside at 1141 Thomas Avenue North. I've been there for 50 years, and I'm here to oppose the development. I have many, many reasons. I don't know how much time, but I will tell you that in the 50 years I've been there, we've noticed changes in terms of health and safety for our community, particularly our children. I have surveyed the other residents that are around my community, and they are also opposed to this development. Initially, we thought it was going to be just one building, and when the developer came to our community organization, the idea was that it was going to be much higher and it was going to be too small for the space that was being presented. We learned that the original proposal was rescinded. And then a couple weeks later, I got a note saying that this developer wants to continue with this building. The reason for the opposition is that since I've been there, the traffic that comes from Plymouth down 14th continues to be very unsafe for our children and our seniors, particularly since most of the seniors that I have interviewed are of the age of close to retirement. They cannot use the park many times because of the new families that have moved in that have young children. So we were more interested in having our park upgraded so we could have intergenerational activity. Not only is the parking a problem in this area, is that most of the neighbors have garages where they park their cars in the garage. In the wintertime, those neighbors that don't have a garage park on the street. That also happens when there is time for the streets to be cleaned. Because of the traffic that comes from Plymouth Avenue down 14th, down 12th, down Sheridan to get to Highway 55, it is unsafe. So it's for those reasons that we are opposed, and I have several residents that are opposed to having something like that built in the neighborhood.
Thank you for your comment.
I have one other suggestion as a senior. You know, it's nice that you all could see your names, but it would be better if I could see your names, and I'd have to get very close to see Olson, Ford, and haven't been able to see some of the reasons why you think the last development was good or bad. So you need to do something about the lighting in here.
Thank you. We appreciate that feedback, for sure.
Hello, my name is Azucena Ortega, and I have lived in North Minneapolis for over 39 years. I live a few blocks from where this development is being proposed for like 20 years. So I have prepared a statement, so I'm just gonna go ahead and read it. In order for a variance to be approved, the variance request cannot alter the essential character of the area or be harmful to the use or enjoyment of other properties in the area. Granting these setback variances will cause a blind spot for drivers in the area of Plymouth Ave that is currently highly utilized by pedestrians and bikers. Approving these variances would make this area congested and unsafe. Thus, granting these variances is both harmful to the area and will change the character of the area for the worse. Residents in this area have worked hard to preserve and build a beautiful community. In spite of the city-sanctioned redlining, the gang and drug epidemic, the foreclosure crisis, the 2011 tornado, and now the increase in violence after the 2020 uprise to make this a safe and desirable neighborhood. Not only is approving the variance for setbacks illegal given the damage it will cause to our neighborhood, it would show an utter disrespect the city and the outside developers having for our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Pichelle Johnson. I am a longtime resident of Minneapolis, born and raised in North Minneapolis, and a property owner on Upton and Queen Avenue North. I do support the redevelopment of the area with conditions. I believe the 2309 location, the five-story, raising it to five-story, could be a little bit of a problem in that area on Plymouth. It's primarily homeowners on that piece of land or that block, for instance, and five stories seems a little bit intense for that area. The other thing I would say is parking. I'm concerned about the parking. A lot of people that are renting in that area do not have sufficient garage spaces. So the parking is always a problem, especially in the wintertime. So it's something definitely to consider. And my last point on the other location on Russell, that one seems like something that should work. I support multi-level housing. I support low income or affordable housing in that area. But I think the recommendations and conditions for that person to definitely seek out the approval and the engagement of the community and have approval of that before they can come forward to this body and before that can be approved, either in writing or have other people from the community give support. That community is one that there have been residents that have lived there for a really long time and are vested interest in that community. And I think that they should have a voice and who comes into their neighborhood and who can build in their neighborhood. And I think that community engagement needs to be a requirement before they get approval. The NERC board is one that has been very strong in that community. So a support letter from specifically from NERC, I think, is a good way to do the pulse of the community and see if those folks are in are approval and supportive of having somebody come into the community and build in that community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Bill Dexamer-Ferris. I've lived just a couple of blocks from this proposed development for the last 20 years. At 2511 12th Avenue North. Just today, as I walked to the bus, which I normally get to work either biking through this corridor to the University of Minnesota or going to the Sea Line, I was reminded once again of my major concern. I should say I support very much NERC's alternative plans for this these spots. I have for years going by these blocks wondered when they would be developed for housing, but this is a size of a project that is wildly, I believe, out too large. Particularly, my main concern is parking and congestion, traffic congestion. Going one block north on Queen and one block south from Plymouth at the corner of this project, I saw once again today virtually every spot taken, I believe, mostly by North Point workers. This has been a problem for years of lack of parking in this immediate area. And it sounds like there isn't much of a plan for parking for residents of this very large development, and I'm super concerned about congestion. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Martine Smaller. I'm the Executive Director of the Northside Residents Redevelopment Council. We are the neighborhood organization for the Willard Hay and Near North neighborhoods here in North Minneapolis. I'm just curious, are there any Northsiders on this commission? Great. So you're familiar with the area? Great. NERC understands that there is an affordable housing crisis in the city. However, bending the zoning code to cram vulnerable people into neighborhoods that have experienced the most harm at the hands of the city and investors causes more damage than solutions. The request for setback variances do not meet the three necessary findings required by Minneapolis zoning code. Therefore, setback variances cannot legally be granted. Excuse me. The first finding indicates there must be practical difficulties that prevent complying with the zoning ordinance. However, the staff report does not state any practical difficulties that would prevent the developer from complying with the zoning ordinance. Further, the staff report does not describe any features unique to these lots. Therefore, the variance around setback cannot legally be approved. The staff report notes that there are varied setbacks along Plymouth Avenue without noting that Plymouth Avenue was narrowed in 2021 by the addition of bike lanes. Those varied setbacks were installed when Plymouth Avenue was wider. So not only are there no practical difficulties warranting the requested setbacks, with a more narrow Plymouth Avenue, it is no longer safe to have reduced setbacks there. Second, granting these variances for setbacks does not maintain the spirit of the zoning ordinance. The aforementioned lots are located in a residential area. Minimizing the setbacks on a building with this height will look out of character in this neighborhood and dwarf the nearest surrounding residential structures. This is especially detrimental in a neighborhood where the residents work hard to maintain the high quality of their housing stock while on fixed incomes and throughout decades of external destructive pressures. Furthermore, the purpose of setbacks in a residential neighborhood is to assure that all neighbors can access light through their windows and that they are allowed their privacy. These setbacks with buildings of this height negates the intended zoning protections for the surrounding residents. Bless you. Additionally, this proposal with its requested variances does not meet the goals of the 2040 Comprehensive Plan. The first 2040 goal the proposal seeks to achieve is to increase affordable housing. However, this proposal does not align with the guidelines stated in the affordable housing goal of the 2040 plan. The affordable housing goal states allowing housing in areas, quote, with access to frequent and fast transit, employment, and goods and services, end quote. The proposed location does not have frequent and fast transit as listed in the Minneapolis Comprehensive Plan. Residents who don't have a car would need to take two buses to reach a grocery store. There are no businesses in the vicinity of this proposal where intended residents could be employed. Further, there are no goods and services such as a cafe, a grocery store, a dry cleaner, a baker, or an auto mechanic that the intended residents could visit. Since there are no goods and services in this area, extending the setbacks only crams more people into a food and amenity desert and would be poor city planning in an area of the city that has already been a victim of harmful city planning. Aside from not reasonably meeting the housing goal in the Minneapolis Comp Plan, this proposal works against Comp Plan Goals 1, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, and 13. Given that this request for a variance around setbacks does not meet the second finding, it cannot be approved. Finally, James Archer's proposal request for setbacks variances also does not meet the third finding that needs to be in place to legally grant setbacks variances. This finding states that a variance, quote, will not alter the essential character of the locality or be injurious to the use or enjoyment of the other property in the vicinity, end quote. As previously stated, bike lanes were added and sidewalks were reconfigured on Plymouth Avenue in 2021. These improvements were made to encourage walking and biking, but made Plymouth Avenue more narrow. Approval of these variances will reduce and remove the sight lines and create a blind corner for approaching cars, impeding a driver's ability to see bikers and pedestrians while simultaneously adding 63 new residents to the intersection who will be coming and going. Clearly, approval of these variances will be injurious to the community and alter the character of the area by transitioning this area of Plymouth from being calm and accessible to bikers and pedestrians to one that is unsafe and congested. A building of this height at these setbacks will dwarf surrounding structures and overwhelm pedestrians and cyclists, leaving them to feel like they are passing a real-life transformer. In conclusion, the developer has not presented a rationale for variances that meet a single finding that would necessitate varying the zoning code. Therefore, these requests cannot legally be approved. The last thing I would like to say is it is really disconcerting to hear that there are certain members of this commission that just approve applications based on the city recommendation. That would be exactly how redlining happened. Would those same people just co-sign redlining? I would encourage all of the members of the commission to think for themselves and read all of the materials. NERC's materials start on page, I think, 55 of this application, and I think all of that information should be reviewed by all of the members. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Good evening, Commission. My name is Crystal Porter, and I'm the Executive Director of MN Renewable Now that connects low-income community members to renewable energy, energy efficiency, and water-sensitive urban land design opportunities. I'm also a resident of the Willard Hay neighborhood. I live on Thomas Avenue. Looking at the Minneapolis Climate Action Plan of 2013, which is outdated, yet thankfully it's being worked on, currently under Section 7 and reducing wastewater treatment impacts, our goal as a collective in this city is to explore options for expanding the use of water conservation measures in public and private buildings. Under Policy 74 of the 2040 plan, under integration of water management into development, it is written, the city must continue to prevent contaminants from entering the groundwater to protect the water from intentional or accidental pollution. This requires incorporating water management systems into new development, into streetscape infrastructure, and into parks and open spaces. Decreasing setbacks by even 5 feet would increase stormwater runoff by over 1,500 gallons every time it rains. There are requirements when it comes to setbacks in every development plan. Currently, this development plan is asking for a reduction in setbacks overall in order to fit more units into a structure to increase the revenue. Because of this, I'm currently asking the commission to not recommend this plan to our city council, and please do not approve the variance. One other thing I'd like to point out is 38 units with 5 off-street parking spaces, 25 units with 0 parking. And just like a gentleman said earlier, I used to work at North Point Health and Wellness Center for years. If you know anything about North Minneapolis, along Queen Avenue, there is 0 parking for anyone who lives there, owns or rents at all. There is nobody has made an attempt to give permit parking for Queen Avenue at all. If you go outside of the city of Minneapolis and you go to Robbinsdale and go around North Memorial Hospital, you can't find a parking spot for blocks away from that health facility because the neighborhood was protected. And in our community, you can't find parking anywhere around that area already as it is. I do not oppose the idea of building more low-income housing. I do not oppose the idea of creating more housing for our community. The problem is we have to make sure that we look at the 2040 plan and we look at our environmental impacts that are going to happen and the livability and the safety of the community first before we accept these things. So thank you very much. Have a lovely night.
Hello, I'm Fred Olson. I live at 1221 Russell Avenue North. I've been a block club. I've lived there since 1977. I'm about a half a block south of the West Building. As I say, I've been a block club for many years. I also happen to, as a block club service, go around and door knock when people forget to move their car. And we have lots of parking. It's true that just north of us on Queen, it's always a parking problem because of North Point. But south of it, I don't think that's the case. Let's see, a couple of other points. There was commented that there isn't good transit. We are out, that site is 2 blocks from the Sea Lion stop at Plymouth. So I don't understand that comment at all. Setback, across the street, Homewood Studios, Plymouth Studios, and the church directly across the street are all adjacent to the sidewalk. At the presentation at NERC just before COVID, so that'd be 2-3 years ago, it was commented that people in these apartments were expected not to own cars. Is there any way to enforce that? And because it indeed the number of units proposed is of concern because it just seems like a lot. But they're small units, so the number of people and so on would be proportionately smaller. So anyway, I'm generally in favor of this proposal, although I am somewhat concerned about the total number of units.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item? Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Shauna O'Brien. I live at 1245 Queen Avenue, which is one house removed from one of the buildings. I agree with Martine and what my other neighbors have said. I just wanted to add that I have several issues with the proposed setbacks variance, and the biggest one is regarding safety, which I know we've already heard. I live on Queen Avenue, and I bike, and I walk, and I drive, so I know these streets really well. Plymouth Avenue has already been narrowed with the addition of the protected bike lane running parallel to the sidewalk. So in addition to pedestrian traffic, we now have cycling traffic more heavily than we ever have. Reducing the setbacks to 3 feet on Queen and to 1 foot on Plymouth will absolutely reduce visibility, therefore safety. It's already difficult to turn from the alley onto Plymouth due to the narrowing of that road, and adding tall buildings nearly up to the sidewalk is going to make it more difficult and dangerous, especially for the pedestrians and the cyclists. Cars will be forced to pull into the sidewalk crossing to see traffic coming down the street. I actually drove down my alley today and just double checked that if there are buildings built to those setbacks, which are marked, I have to pull into that sidewalk and almost into the bike lane before I can see what's happening with traffic there. And that's very dangerous. So I believe it would be irresponsible to build a structure of this size so close to sidewalks and bike lanes. I don't think it was designed in a way that considers the residents in our neighborhood and how we navigate it. I think it was designed to use as much land as possible for financial gain. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Asher Gavzi. I am the president of Property Solutions and Services. We manage 1,200 affordable units inside the 494-694 loop. We manage for the city of Minneapolis and their ESP properties. We also manage Homewood Apartments, which NERC is a partner in. So I think it needs to be mentioned that Mr. Archer is part of the BIPOC community. The city of Minneapolis has tried very hard to find BIPOC owners and developers and groom them. And he's also part of the community. And this is a sea of white male people that James is breaking into. So I think I think the most important thing that really needs to be discussed is the 30% AMI units. That is part of the Hennepin County Continuum of Care plan. That's part of the city of Minneapolis's plan. For him to size and scale a building with that many units is very difficult and is not really been able to be replicated that much. There's a housing crisis, and we need deeply affordable units everywhere, not just in North Minneapolis, not just in Minneapolis. And so I'm for this variance.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item? All right, I'm not seeing any. Oh, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having us here tonight and discussing this development. My name is Louise Savoysky. I work at Landon Group. We are affordable housing consultants based out of the Twin Cities. We have been working with James on this development since the beginning in 2019. We were hired to help structure and get funding and create a development that meets both city and county and statewide housing goals, which I think we've done very soundly in this with the inclusion of 30% units, project-based Section 8, supportive housing units, and then the remainder of the units at 50%, which meet both city and county goals, which is reflected in the amount of funding that we've secured from both the city and the county. At this point, we are, the city and county combined, have about $7 million into the deal, and we will get additional city funding in the form of 4% tax credits, bonds, and tax increment financing. So this development clearly checks the boxes that the city and county really want to see. And I think further, it's worth recognizing that this is more of a mission-driven development than a profit-driven development. It's very easy to structure a development that has the 50s and the 60s, but James has really taken those city and county priorities and structured a deal that meets those. And so for that reason, I fully support this and agree the variances should be approved.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item?
Hi, my name's Kirsten. I've lived in the neighborhood just blocks from where Mr. Archer is trying to put these buildings for 25 years. I think that I want to make clear that we don't oppose affordable housing and these structures are structures for affordable housing. It's just that I think that when you do something like this, community needs to be part of it to understand where we live and how we live, and just that we really care about where we live. We know that this has been done in other parts of the city, not too far from us. And we look at it now and we see that there are just only Section 8. It's all Section 8. It was supposed to be this whole, tiered whatever living, but it ends up just all being Section 8. And we just want to make sure that we watch out for our elders and for people that we know that might be able to afford these places as well. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item? Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought he was walking the podium. All right, I'm not seeing anyone, so I will close the public hearing. Commissioners, any discussion or would anyone like to make a motion? Commissioner Marwah?
Yeah, hi. Can I just get an update from the applicant team about the community engagement that happened around this project? Just go up there, please, to the mic.
Yes, this was presented in person. 3-9-2020 brought in site plans. It's pretty much the same development today that it was then. I provided an update 9-12-2020 to inform people in the community at NERC of the funding commitments and that the project was moving forward. And there was North Point, it should be in your packet, has signed a letter of support. They have a no-cost food shelf there. They have a cafe and bistro. I'm assuming NERC, the neighborhood, knows this. This was awarded the senior set-aside. This is going to be marketed for seniors, to seniors in the community. I've had a number of discussions with people in the community that this was a need. I have a letter of support that's also in your packet from George Roberts that has a breakdown of, you know, kind of the timeline, and that he was supportive of it with more information that you could find in your packet. So there's been a fair amount of outreach over the years, and living there for that long, I mean, I have a pretty good idea of what the feedback has been.
I feel like we've just heard from a number of neighbors that there's been a lack of community engagement or kind of being part of the process or hearing about it. And also, I think just the letter from NERC kind of outlining a lot of, you know, they're obviously a supporter of this type of housing existing and wanting to see this type of housing. And I think I'm just trying to understand, where is that discrepancy facing from what we're hearing, and then where is that NERC letter coming from?
Well, so the thing is, I mean, in that NERC letter, I think I seen I was called an outsider, which is, I mean, I know some of them, they know me. I mean, that's patently false. I mean, I lived there for 13 years. I lived, like, literally right down the street. The other piece is saying that there's no access to food. It's a food desert. There's a cafe coming in right across the street. So there's some of these things. I mean, I think ultimately what it comes down to, they can tear me down or whatever the case is, but it's really about the people that this building is going to serve. And this is relatively small amount of people that you're hearing from. But I think the bigger picture is that this is going to serve people in the community, and there's a need for it. So, I mean, I could, let me look at the letter and see what else there is. It's there's some complaints from NERC about crime and stuff. I mean, I don't know. I think when we look at my reputation and what I've done and kind of look at some of the other things that are going on, I think there's another discussion to be had about NERC in general. So I can... Any other questions I can also answer?
I have a quick question for staff. Thank you.
Oh, sure.
Shannon, I have a quick question about corridor four. Why, at a project of like the size, is there no commercial space included? Is that not allowable in corridor four? Or is that a choice of the applicant? I guess just walk me through why that frontage on Plymouth has no commercial space.
Sure. Thanks very much for the question, Commissioner Marwa, President Olson. So the future land use designation for these properties would lend itself, the corridor mixed use, to commercial zoning in the future. But today it's zoned R4. So in order to authorize a mixed use building or a sole commercial use, the applicant would have to obtain consent signatures from property owners within 100 feet of the property, and at least 2/3 of them would have to agree to rezone the property to commercial before they can even apply. So right now the city is in the middle of the land use rezoning study to align our primary zoning district with the comprehensive plan. So we anticipate that happening in 2023. I believe you had a recent presentation from my colleagues in co-development at one of your committee of the whole meetings. So as far as requiring commercial, however, the future land use designation here is not a designation such as destination mixed use that would require some type of ground floor active use or retail. So in the future, we anticipate commercial zoning here. It's not there today. Right now, it's zoned R4, which allows for multifamily residential dwellings, and that's what's before you today. In the future, with a commercial zoning, could they propose the same development? Yes, because commercial zoning doesn't mean the use has to have commercial uses, either part of a mixed-use building or solely commercial. But with a commercial zoning in the future, the building as designed would not require the variances that have been requested today.
And as the applicant team, had you all wanted to pursue any type of commercial on this ground floor space, or no, because it was not allowable as of code right now?
No, there has been no effort to pursue.
All right, Commissioner Alper.
I would like to make a motion. Can I do that at this point?
Sure.
And then people can discuss to the motion. I would like to make a motion to adopt staff findings related to items 9 and items... Item 10, item 9 and item 10.
All right, is there a second? All right, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Commissioner Wire, then we'll go to Commissioner Alper.
Okay, I'm gonna soapbox a little. So sorry in advance, because this is my neighborhood. And typically people from, North, as we've seen people from South and Northeast, have a lot of time to come out and come to these meetings and fight people. And I'm really happy to see all of you here tonight. And I appreciate you taking time out of your day to come here and sit here for hours at this point. And that's just one thing I want to flag for the commission is that, like, these items typically stay on consent and we don't discuss them because the neighborhoods with the most power and the most free time on their hands get their items discussed and bettered, which I just feel like is inherently a problem. The other issue that I see that popped up from this is, like, North Minneapolis is a food desert and we don't require commercial and our rezoning study isn't done. And even when that is done, we won't require commercial. And we're putting more people in a place with no services and no amenities. And it sucks. I have to drive like 10 minutes to a grocery store. Or take 2 buses, as someone mentioned. And I think we need to look at our rezoning study about requiring commercial or amenities or something here and not just like activating the ground floor. And I'm off the commission in January. So I really urge the commission to look at that in the rezoning study. That's not really, I mean, this project, it's site plan review and a variance, and we have very little discretion with site plan review and the variances. I think do make sense in this situation. I think they meet the character of the neighborhood. So those are our kind of under our purview. But I think a lot of like larger issues were brought up here is that like in our site, in our development projects, North Minneapolis gets forgotten all the time because people don't have time to come here and complain at 4:30 because they're at work and it's really far and it's hard to get to. Like it just is. So I think we need to like give North Minneapolis a special focus in our development review. And I wish there was like a dedicated planner for North Minneapolis specifically so people knew who they could go to and like build a relationship with the community. I think that would really help, especially with someone who lived in North Minneapolis. And I just really thank you guys for being here. I think the project makes sense with what we look at, but I think you all raised a lot of separate issues that I really hope this commission can tackle in the future. So, thank you.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear you. You thought that the 2 variances made sense in this case? Thank you.
Okay. I think it was Commissioner Alper next. Or no, sorry, Fayla, sorry.
Thank you. I just have a question for staff regarding the variances. I mean, it seems like a pretty hefty to go from, I didn't write it down in last my note, but so what are the practical difficulties that were considered to have the variances be that large for the setbacks specifically?
Thank you so much. I'm sorry, just a moment as we
it's okay.
work through the technology.
And the reason I'm asking, I guess, isn't just for no reason. It's because I heard from one of the neighbors because the road has been accommodates a bike path. And coming out of the alleys, the setbacks will, there's a concern with the visibility, which becomes a safety issue, and that's why I'm asking.
I do want to note something. So I posted notice. And so...
I just want to spend a little bit more time describing the variances as requested. So the first variance, and we'll start with the east building, is to reduce the front yard setback from, sorry, let me grab my notes, 35 feet to 3 feet. So that 35 feet measures to the front of the single-family dwelling to the south. This zoning district corridor 4, or built for the corridor 4 built form overlay, has a 15-foot setback. So the setback increases because the neighbor's house is set back an additional 20 feet. So that minimum front yard setback applies to the whole property. So you can just kind of picture nothing is allowed within that area that is structure. So the applicant notched out the building here for 25 feet to provide relief. And this is what would be consistent in the future district, because it will likely be zoned commercial, is that's what the comprehensive plan is asking for. So that similar condition exists in the west building. But this case, the neighbor to the south is only set back 28.1 feet, but you can see they're doing the same thing where they're matching it. And then the corner side yard setbacks are either 1 foot or 0 feet along the north property line. So the staff analysis identifies that this building form is consistent with the other building forms similarly along Plymouth Avenue, where we see reduced setbacks for multifamily residential and non-residential structures. And so that is the practical difficulty that's applied here, is the location of the adjacent dwellings to the south, particularly for the front yard and that street wall condition along Plymouth Avenue North.
Thank you. That's helpful. Thanks. Really helpful.
Commissioner Alper?
Thank you. I guess I have a question for staff. Was a NERC letter of support a requirement or for this?
In order to make a land use application before the city of Minneapolis, the applicant is only required to notify the neighborhood association of the applications they intend to apply for. So in this case, the applicant met with the neighborhood association, and as you know, there's been long conversations between the developer and with the neighborhood association. So that is not a requirement in order to deem an application complete to bring it to this commission.
Thank you for that. I do have a question for the applicant. I'm curious, you know, we've heard comments tonight about parking, about traffic, and I think it's notable that you're following the code in terms of parking. And I just wanted to ask if you had considered the residential transit pass, offering this at your building. It's $14 a month per person, per unit, excuse me. And certainly you would have the minimum number of required units because you have more than 10 units. Is that something you've thought about?
I could consider it. I mean, we haven't looked in terms of, because there is the bus rapid transit that's like 200 feet away from here. So that is something that we could potentially look into. The other thing, though, is with the traffic. So one or a couple people had mentioned, where the stakes are in the ground, like, you know, in terms of setbacks and visuals. So they mean, come in?
Yeah, if I may, because that's separate. Is that separate from the transit pass?
That's separate from that question, yeah. But I think you were asking about traffic and stuff before that. But
Okay, go ahead.
You want to answer in the transit pass? We haven't looked into that as of yet. I mean, that's something we can explore. This is the first time I've heard about it.
Sure, great. Well, I encourage you to consider it in light of what you're hearing from the neighbors.
Yeah, of course. And can I add something now?
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks. So with the stakes that are in the ground, that was actually I was just meeting the statutory requirements for posting this meeting. So that's actually not where the building is going to go. So I think some people think those are survey stakes where the building is going to be built, is because it's at the corners of the property right now. So they've been driving by there. They think the building is going to get built there, which that's not going to be the case.
Okay.
Where it's posted. So I just wanted to clarify that point about.
Great.
Being able to see.
Thank you very much. I want to ask, Shanna, one more question. Traffic or public works reviews these applications right? For, you know, some of the issues of sight lines and traffic. Our City of Minneapolis staff are looking at these applications for these types of issues? Okay.
As part of the development review process, we have an application type and a process called preliminary development review. So the applicant, prior to coming to the commission, does an initial submission, and those, so that project is evaluated and comments are given. And if the project is approved by the Planning Commission or City Council on appeal, then they come back and resubmit, and they would adhere to any comments that are required in addition to any conditions of approval that could be placed on an approval. So yes, our traffic and parking services and others in public works would evaluate the site.
Great, thank you. And I just am wondering, you know, we have certain permit parking districts in the city. Is that something that neighbors can, you know, if they're interested in pursuing that, is that something, who could they get in touch with if they would like that?
I believe that the critical parking program is still something available. Essentially, what happens is a group of property owners and neighbors within a certain area will petition for that critical parking area. But as of note, anyone who's a resident would be able to apply for that critical parking permit. So any of, if these projects were approved, and we'll just say one per dwelling unit, the 63 people would be able to apply for the same permit as anyone who already lives in the neighborhood, plus visitor passes. And so it ends up becoming, just to note, is that it becomes a cost bared upon those who both live there now and then in the future, including their visitors, for to park on street during certain periods of time. That's generally how it works.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right, McGuire was up, then Rainville, then Ford.
Okay.
Oh, it's old. Okay, so Rainville. Oh, wait.
Would you mind if I just want to follow up on one question there, if you don't mind? Excuse me. You said that, I think you said that the owners could apply to create a critical area.
I believe it's owners and residents.
Pardon?
Owners and residents, I believe, can apply for critical parking.
No, I don't mean applying for a permit. I mean about for the creation of a
district
area. So, I mean, can neighbors who rent petition for that creation too?
I don't know for sure. It's a public works program, but I believe that is accurate, that anyone can come together to apply for a critical parking area. But again, that it's available to anyone who is a resident within those boundaries as defined by the map.
Thank you.
All right. Commissioner Rainville.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Elpers. Just in the spirit of our head clerk, Casey Carl, you're cutting off because you're grabbing the mic, and these are not designed to do that. If he saw you doing that, he would fall over.
Thank you.
So just don't grab the mic and everything.
Don't do it. Okay, thank you for that.
That's good information. All right, Marwa.
Yeah, I just had a follow-up for Shanna real quick. If you can help explain to our Northside neighbors how they could make the critical parking area designation happen, because I think what we heard is that it sounds like North Clinic is the one that is parking a lot of the neighborhood. So if there is a way for them, just kind of walk through that process again of how does this neighborhood can collectively get those parking passes.
I will not claim to be an expert, first, on critical parking, but I can give you a little bit of history on parking in the area, because I was the assigned planner for what was formerly known as the Thor Building. It's now the 1256 building, and the number of parking spaces that were allocated within that building with the intent of supporting the non-residential uses within the area, including North Point and Hennepin County. So there's also a number of parking spaces that were approved as part of the North Point expansion on premises. I think that that project is under construction today as well. So I think that there's a lot of change occurring. And then lastly, also the Estes funeral home was also redeveloped nearby the site to provide a substantial off-street parking area. There is no minimum off-street parking required for any land use in the City of Minneapolis. recognizing the concerns related to parking is difficult to tie to a finding from a staff perspective. Certainly, the Planning Commission, you are the decision makers for today's public hearing items. But as far as establishing a critical parking area, I would have to defer anyone here today who's interested in pursuing that to the Public Works Department. And their website is pretty great when it comes to looking up this kind of information.
Thank you. That's good for us to know also. So I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Commissioner McGuire. No, the public hearing is closed. So thank you.
Just on the note on the motion, I do think the variances make sense in this situation. I think the site plan makes sense in this situation. However, we have tabled multiple projects recently for not doing community engagement. And since they haven't reached out to the neighborhood since 2020, I feel like we should give them an opportunity to meet with the neighbors and kind of see what they can do to improve the project and come back to us. So I don't know if anyone else would be interested in that, but just for to give the residents a chance to meet with them again, because I don't see that facilitation is going to happen if we don't require that.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a motion on the table to adopt staff recommendation. Is there any other discussion? All right, seeing none, I'll ask the clerk to please call the roll.
Commissioner Alper.
Aye, and I did it without touching
the mic. Be careful.
Commissioner Baxley.
Aye.
Commissioner Cedrillo.
Yes.
Commissioner Feola.
Aye.
Commissioner Ford.
Aye.
Commissioner Marwa.
Aye.
Commissioner McGuire.
No.
Commissioner Rainville.
Aye.
Chair Olson.
Aye, sorry.
So that's 8 ayes and 1 nay.
All right, that motion passes. Did you need something, Commissioner Alper?
Feola.
I don't know why I'm doing that today. I'm sorry.
No, I just want to support what Chloe said. And yes, we just voted for staff recommendations. But we would ask, and I hope and really encourage you to please go back and talk to the neighborhood, because it's more than just a building, it's a community. Thanks for your consideration.
All right. It's been brought to my attention that there may not be any residents here for item number 15. So is there anyone here? There is. Okay, excellent. I'm glad we didn't make people wait around for no reason. Okay. So let's see. Our next item is item number 13. And staff is Peter Crandall. Okay, go for it. Yep. I mean, do you want to just pause?
If we can, actually.
Okay. Commissioners, would everyone be okay with a 5-minute break? Any opposition? All right, Peter, we're going to take a 5-minute break. All right.